Hi, this is Aaron Newcomen. On this episode of Floss Weekly, Dan Lynch joins me to talk about Mifos and their new product, Mifos X. They were on the show a while ago, and now they're back to tell us what's up. You're not going to want to miss it. It's right now on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Aaron Newcomen and Dan Lynch, episode 289, recorded on April 9th, 2014, Mifos X. Hey, welcome to Floss Weekly, the show that talks about open source software. Free Libre open source software is what Floss stands for. It's not a dental thing or hygienic thing that we do. Oh, well, I guess it is, but we also talk about open source software. So that's what this show is concerned about. And we've got a great topic this morning. We're going to be talking about Mifos, the guys from Mifos, talking about microfinance. But before we get to all that, let me bring on my lovely co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, how's it going?
Hey, it's good to be back. I like being called a lovely co-host. That's fantastic. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's comparative, right? So I'm like looking at myself and then I think, let's get to Dan because...
Wow.
Yeah, it's early in the morning here in San Francisco. So,
It is. I do have the advantage of time zones work for me in this setup because it's now, what, 4:30 in the afternoon?
Right.
I've had a nice leisurely day so far.
Right. Yeah, so you're winding down and I'm still, doing my best to juice up on the coffee here, trying to get my eyes a little bit wider in the morning. But so we're going to be talking about Mifos today. I don't know. Have you heard much about Mifos? I know we did have them on the program. I don't know how many. It was a year ago or maybe a little longer.
No, it's 6 years ago by my calculation. Nearly 6 years.
So you've done your homework. I wasn't so good. I knew it was a while ago. So I knew it was before my time, I guess. So it would have been more than a year ago because I've been doing this for 2 or 3 years now. So do you know much about Mifos? Have you ever used it or talked to people who use it?
I haven't used it, I've got to be honest. But I have looked into it a little bit. And I had a listen to the show that they were on, which it was in 2008. So, yeah, 6 years ago. Sounded really, really fascinating. And I'm keen to see what's happened in the 6 years because there was a lot of stuff in that show when I was listening to it last night. When they were saying, oh, we want to do this, we want to do that, and so on. So now we can take them to task and say, did you do this? Did you do that? all that kind of stuff. But now it looks really fascinating for microfinancing and stuff. I've got to be honest, microfinancing is not something I've looked into a hell of a lot of. So I was reading up on this last night and trying to get up to speed.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that's kind of bubbled up, I think, over the past few years especially. So it sounds like, Mifos was probably really on the forefront of what's going on there. So it's going to be really interesting to see what's going on now. I think people are more open to microfinance, with things like Kickstarter and that kind of thing, where you're used to like, this sounds good. I'll chip in $25 or something to see if this can get going. So, we'll cover that with our guests. In fact, why don't we just bring them on right now and get right to it? We don't want to keep anybody in suspense any longer. Let's bring on our guests, Ed Cable and Vishwas Babu from Mifos. Guys, how you doing?
Yeah, doing good today.
Good. Great. Thanks for being here, guys. So, we could tell everyone to go back and listen to that old podcast, which probably is a good idea. But just for those that probably aren't going to do it, like me, I didn't actually go back and listen to it. Why don't you just set it up again for us? What is Mifos? What does it do? What's the purpose?
Yeah, so I'll jump in and then I'll let Vishwas add some more of the technical bits. But basically, we're a global open source community that provides a technology platform for bringing financial services to the poor. And so when we last spoke to you, our focus was on microfinance. And since then, we've expanded to reach out to the broader financial inclusion, which means not only the loan products that are delivered to the poor, but also savings accounts, microinsurance, and really focusing on ensuring that clients have access to responsible financial tools to help them lift themselves out of poverty. So we both developed the platform and we develop and cultivate a community which is supporting, developing, and using the software worldwide.
Great. Yeah, so this is really for, I've heard stories about this working very well in poorer regions of the world where someone, just needs a little bit of help getting a small business set up, you know, maybe they want to, there's a need in the community and they want to start a business to address that, but they don't have the funds and it's difficult to get a loan, right? So they, so this is an opportunity for them, microfinance, and we'll talk about, you know, broadening that, like you said, but this is an opportunity for them to go get some money, some startup cash to go get their business going, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, John. So really, it's getting access to that capital, you know, sometimes to start a business, sometimes it might be to cover a large expense that's coming up. And with products like savings accounts, it's really just the ability to have a safe place to store your money. So, so many of the customers prior to having access to microfinance or micro savings, they might be storing their savings underneath their mattress. They might be, you know, burying it in a field. And so that's not a safe or secure way for them to actually access their money. So financial inclusion and microfinance in general really simply provides, you know, some of those basic financial tools that we take for granted here, but it has an incredible impact on being able to, you know, create a better life for themselves and their families.
Right, right. So that's a good primer on microfinance in general. Now, what are you doing to broaden that out, as you say, into more general financing?
Yes, I'll let Vishwas cover this one. But this past year, we've gone and taken on some really exciting work. So we've relaunched MIFOS as the MIFOSX platform. And so we now are a true platform where all the core functionalities needed to handle these financial services, they're all exposed through clean, RESTful APIs, which really puts the power to innovate in the hands of our community. And there's no limits now on what products, what services they can build on top of the platform.
Yeah, that's right, Ed. You know, so the last time we spoke, you know, MIFOS was a single cohesive product. So it was very well tailored for one methodology of microfinance, you know, which was the most popular methodology back then. You know, but since then, microfinance has evolved around us. So you see very radically different methodologies, you know, in different regions, you know, based on what works best for them. And it's not possible, you know, to have one product to suit all those different operational models, the different workflows and whatnot. So, I mean, technically, one of the changes we made was, you know, we separated MIFOS into a platform, you know, which exposes all your core functionality, you know, which is required for any bank or microfinance or any financial inclusion program in general, you know. So we have these APIs which have your loan management functionality, your saving management functionality, your client protection, client data, any additional data which you want to capture, and poverty analysis and so on. And, you know, so people can build their own applications, their own workflows on top of these APIs. You know, we still ship a product which serves, you know, the 80-20 use case for microfinances. But now there's a lot of flexibility for people to build their own apps, you know, using our APIs.
Ah, so that's a big difference there, right? Using the APIs to build somebody's apps. Can you give us an example of the differences? You know, what are the extremes for how people are able to use this now? And maybe that makes sense, maybe it doesn't. But I'm just kind of curious just to set the stage here. You know, maybe you have your traditional microfinance app, but you say that there's people using that want to use this in different ways. So what's the extreme, the other extreme, if you will?
Right. You know, so, you know, I'll just talk about a few customers, you know. So, I mean, a few people who use MIFOS. So, you know, one of the organization is called Gramina Kuta in Bangalore. So they're very traditional microfinances. So they give out loans to groups. So their workflow involves, you know, identifying a group, you know, tracking a group's history, giving a loan to an entire group, tracking the repayments at a group level and so on. And now if we look at another organization, this one called Musoni in Kenya. So they are completely cashless microfinance. So, you know, they don't disburse any money. You know, all their transactions are done through mobile banking, M-Pesa. And all their transactions, you know, are done to individuals at a group level. You know, and there is a lot of focus on savings there. And the workflows are, you know, are totally different. They're optimized for, you know, a branchless operation. So you have people doing, you know, individual savings and individual lending. You have people doing group lending. You have people, you know, building out their own, you know, very innovative products, you know, like tranche loans, you know, it's similar to housing loans. So, for example, if you have farmers, you know, you'd break down your repayments based on their cash flow. So, you know, you have all these kind of different financial products, and, you know, which can be configured in MIFOS, you know, so people can build their own apps to do this.
Yeah, and just to add what Vishwas was saying, you know, mobile is really one of those exciting directions our new platform is able to take the sector in. So, you know, Musoni, they're not only a cashless microfinance institution, they've also moved to being paperless. So all their field officers, when they go out to meet with their clients, they run their system directly from either a smartphone or a tablet. So not only can they, you know, collect them and do the dispersals via M-Pesa, like Vishwas said, but they also do the entire loan application process via the smartphone or tablet. And then the mobile is not just a powerful tool for the customers themselves. Being able to have access to these, you know, mobile financial services has a huge impact on the directly on the end client. So, for instance, with micro savings, by being able to have like a mobile savings product, a client could, you know, deposit a very tiny amount each day that's more in line with their actual, you know, spending and saving procedures. So with mobile at the forefront, there's a lot that can be done in terms of both how the customers reach their end clients, but also the terms and conditions of the products and services that the clients have to help themselves move out of poverty.
So I mean, it sounds really interesting. I'm just looking online to your website here. I don't know if John can bring that up for us or not, but it looks like you've got the community edition and then the Mifos X platform that you were talking about, the new platform, right? And then you were just talking about the Android client as well, or mobile client. Now, so people can use the mobile client to log in, you know, check their transaction history and so forth. But you also say apply payments. I mean, are people using mobile in these areas to accept payments as well, a la Square and things like that? Can you make that happen, or do you have to go through a third party for those kinds of mobile transactions?
Yeah, so right now it's through third parties. So as Vishwas said, M-Pesa has really been one of the global pioneers in mobile banking. So right now I think the current statistic is that over 40% of the country's entire GDP is transacted via this mobile money platform. So just being able to, you know, simply send and transact through SMS. And so Kenya was one of these regions that first, you know, set the standard for what mobile banking looks like. But there is also, you know, hundreds of other deployments of mobile banking platforms worldwide. And usually these are driven by the local telco company. Sometimes they might be by a certain bank. But now that we have the Mifos X platform in place, we've also gotten a lot of interest in people who want to go out there, you know, and build their own payment platforms. We have discussions going on with someone who's looking at creating their own wireless mesh network and then being able to build a payment platform on top of Mifos X to be completely agnostic of any one telco provider or any one financial institution. So we're really excited by, you know, what the platform has and the potential innovation that can be created when we open it up to this entire community who has, you know, so many great ideas and so much need to really help in bringing poverty alleviation worldwide.
Right, right. So now the question, this begs the question, why open source for this platform? I mean, I think that one of the things I always get when I talk to people about open source software is it's not secure. It's not, everyone has the source code so they can find vulnerabilities. And of course, right now we're in the middle of the Heartbleed bug that's going around with OpenSSL and so forth. So, do you find that you run into this a lot as you're trying to pitch this platform? Do people say, oh, I can't use it because it's open source? Or why did you pick open source?
Vishwas, you've worked with a lot more of our customers in the field in India. So do you want to share some of your experiences and, you know, on the technology front, why we chose open source?
Yes, you know, there are quite a few reasons. You know, so the first one is, you know, it's simply the cost. So, all of us know how much a core banking system costs, you know. And at the end of the day, a microfinance is really similar to a small bank. You know, so they do pretty much the same thing. You know, they account for all their loans, their savings and everything. So at the end of the day, what they really need is a core banking system, you know, which they simply cannot afford. So, I mean, the only solution for them, you know, is, you know, an open source system which does all this functionality and, you know, which is available for free. So, I mean, that was the, you know, the biggest reason for us. You know, we had to be open source because our target market, you know, all these microfinances, they might be, you know, driven by a church or, you know, local charities or whatnot. So, I mean, probably cost, you know, keeping costs as low as possible was one of the biggest reasons for having it open source. And the second one was we wanted to build a community around the Mifos X platform, you know, so small software companies and small organizations, you know, could build enterprise grade banking software on top of this open source platform, and they could then go and resell it at reasonable costs to the small banks. So, and probably these were the two biggest reasons why, you know, we wanted it to be open source. And, you know, of course, you know, there are always concerns, you know, because your source code is available, there are concerns of security, you know, but the other thing which happens is, you know, we have a lot of people, you know, fixing security issues because our source code is available. We have, you know, security specialists who contribute their time, you know, so we try to make the platform as secure as it possibly can be. So.
Yeah, and I'll just add to, go on, Dan.
No, no, it's all right. Carry on. I'll let you finish first.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to add a little bit to what Vishwas said, because, yeah, we have, you know, I think we've seen that the education curve is, you know, a little bit higher, you know, given the market we're working with, just on, you know, communicating the values and benefits of open source. And so we've had to do that, not just with open source, but as we, you know, talk about moving the software into the cloud and whatnot. So that's been a journey, and that's been a challenge that we've, you know, tried to work through. And then just to reemphasize on what Vishwas was noting on the community, like right now, you know, the current target base of people that are unbanked is 2.5 billion individuals worldwide. And if we're going to be able to reach that, you know, we realized that the entire sector needed some open and collaborative way in which to do that. So by putting out this platform and making it open, you know, we give the opportunity to any technology vendor out there, you know, large or small, to be able to work on here. We have the opportunity for any volunteer around the world to, you know, work on the software, write documentation, translate it. And so to really respond to this need, we needed to have an approach that would allow this openness and allow all this collaboration to happen. But we also needed an approach that would enable these business models where people have the incentive to innovate, they have the ability to build their own applications, they have the ability to support the platform and provide the local support that our customers were demanding and were needing, and the flexibility that they needed, because as Vishwas said, there are so many ways in which financial services are brought to the poor, and you can't have just one system. So we needed that flexible data model to support that too. So.
And you mentioned the word flexible a few times there, and something that struck a common problem that you must get asked about a lot, I would assume, would be things like translations, because you're working in so many different countries and different languages and so on. So being open source must help you to leverage the translations and stuff, I would imagine.
Yeah, so being both open source and being a, you know, nonprofit with such a strong charitable mission, that gives us the opportunity to work with, you know, organizations like corporate organizations who want to have volunteers on our project, but it also allows us to work with groups like TranslateWiki.net. So they're the folks that handle and administer all of our translations, and it's been, you know, highly valuable to us to be a part of their community. So we, you know, wake up some days and we see that we've had a volunteer who completed the Spanish translation, or we've got a volunteer, you know, working on the Indonesian translation, and it's just fascinating to, you know, be able to be a part of this and have this contribution flow in, you know, just without any effort on our parts, really. So,
yeah, and working in remote locations, one of the things that kind of struck me immediately would be the kind of access to internet connectivity and so on, because you mainly work as in this web app. Even if it's locally hosted, I believe you'd still need some kind of network connection. So, how's that working? You mentioned the mobile app and so on. Is the penetration there now for people to get a decent mobile connection in rural areas and so on?
You know, it's still a region-to-region thing, you know, so in many of the rural areas and markets like India, so there is sufficient, you know, 2G connectivity. So, you know, connectivity is not the biggest problem there, but in some of the African regions, connectivity is still a big issue. You know, but we have had, you know, different organizations build, you know, store and forward apps, you know, so mobile modules which can, you know, provide offline functionality on top of MIFOS X. You know, so, you know, those are some of the directions in which we're currently heading.
Oh, okay, excellent. So I should have thought of that. So you could just cache changes and so on, and then sync when you get a connection, wherever you're in range. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So looking at the kind of the technology aspect of this a little bit as well, it is a web app, I believe, mainly. Is it last time we spoke to you, which was all of 6 years ago, it was all Java based. Is it still all Java based? And what's your platform looking like now? Your kind of stack, if you like.
Right. Yeah. So now we have two distinct components. You know, the first one is just the platform. So the platform is still Java based. You know, so it is the most commonly used Java stack probably. So we have JP and Hibernate, you know, on Spring on top of that, and Jersey for exposing your RESTful APIs. And we use a MySQL backend. And for the user interface, you know, we have a default user interface, a community app with Shapio. So that is a pure JavaScript application. So that's built on AngularJS, you know, so that, you know, it's easier to modify and so on. So those are the two components.
Ah, okay. And what would I need to kind of host this? I presume I could run this on just, say, a Linux server or something. I mean, if I were to deploy it, what's the kind of tools like for that?
You know, so, I mean, since at the end of the day, it's just a Java app and, you know, JavaScript user interface, you know, there are tons of possibilities. I mean, but most of the people we know, you know, host it on Ubuntu and, you know, they use Tomcat for their servlet container. So, I mean, that's the most common deployment model we come across.
Do you offer, say, like images and things that people could get for, you mentioned the cloud before, which must be a big thing that's coming into your world now, I would imagine, for this kind of operation. So do you offer like images for things like Amazon or any of the other big cloud providers?
Yeah, I mean, we have an Amazon image and we have a Windows Azure image. And probably you know, the second biggest change we have made, you know, from the time we talked to you last time, you know, was now MIFOS X is multi-tenant. You know, so you can host multiple banks or, you know, multiple microfinances on a single installation. So, I mean, that's another architectural change which has happened.
Yeah, and one of the things you talked about last time, which I admit was a long time ago on the show, was things like offering hosted services, you know, offering the app hosted to customers and so on. Do you guys do that, or is that something that maybe another third-party company would come in and offer the support and hosting for?
No, we don't do that now, you know, so we offer... free trial services for people who are looking into MIFOS, but you know, at the end of the day, we'd expect them to, you know, go ahead and host it themselves or get in touch with some of the local specialists for hosting it. So you know, now all our effort is, you know, making sure that the core open source platform and the user interface, you know, is being available. So,
Dan, so we're
a very partner driven community. So we try and, you know, as Vishwas said, line up all of our customers with local partners, and those local partners will be the ones who are running these hosting operations. And so right now, you know, we have some pretty interesting opportunities that might be in the works to potentially deploy, you know, hundreds of institutions at a time on one of these multi-tenant instances. So we've been fortunate enough to work with folks like IBM, who have, you know, lent us some of their power hardware stack to test out the performance and scalability of MIFOS X in some pretty, you know, high volume environments, looking at having hundreds of institutions running on the same code base or having one institution that has hundreds of concurrent users at one time. So we're hoping, you know, that this cloud model will help our software be able to scale, and we're trying to make sure that the platform performs adequately at these high volumes.
So you're actually stress testing it using the hardware and stuff that they've got for you.
Do you want to share some of that, Vishwas, and what we've been doing? So.
Yeah, you know, so earlier the biggest organizations which are using MIFOS, you know, would probably have, you know, say around 1 million customers. But now after we've gone with the multi-tenant approach, you know, you can have multiple organizations with, you know, which can have, you know, like 500,000 customers or 1 million customers on a single instance, you know. So that is where we have been, you know, testing out the multi-tenancy, you know, to see how it performs when you have, you know, this n number of installations on a single, you know, on a single MIFOS X installation, basically n number of tenants. You know, but some of the things we get it very cheap now because we have a RESTful platform, so we are stateless, you know, so horizontal scaling becomes very easy and so on. So,
let me just jump in here and ask. Are you trying to enable people to set up their own businesses using this as a so I can imagine this being a regional thing, right? Like in a certain region of a country, you know, you're trying to offer these services, or in a small country you're trying to offer these services, and so I'm going to set up a business, use MIFOS as my back end, and then offer that as a platform for other people so they don't have to set it up themselves. So it's kind of like a software as a service kind of model.
That's correct.
Yeah, so that's exactly what we've done, Aaron. So we specifically chose for the platform the Mozilla Public License 2.0 to allow, you know, a partner, if they wanted, just to resell the core platform and the core community app. But we also wanted to give partners the option to build out their own solutions on top of the platform. So we mentioned Musoni before. And so this past year, you know, they took our core platform, and working with our developers in just a few months, they built their own application on top of the platform called Musoni System. And so now they're actively deploying that throughout East Africa. and looking into move beyond into West Africa as well. So we wanted to enable both, you know, those business models for the local partners to either just resell Mifos as a either as a hosted solution or, you know, delivered on site, and then also to build your own application or solution custom right on top of the platforms.
Okay. All right. I thought that's what you were describing, and maybe I missed it as I was looking at my notes here, but I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page. So, I mean, that's really interesting. So that really is taking it to the next step in terms of what you guys offer. I think that's and there was a question that may be related to this that came up in the chat room. And then I'm stealing the show from Danny. I got to give it back to Dan to follow up on what he was talking about. I apologize. But there was a question related to this, which was talking about different accounting and regulations in various countries. And how do you I'm assuming that this will help with that as well. If you've got certain accounting requirements, for example, in a particular country versus another, by enabling people to set this up and tailoring it for that specific area, region, in the U.S., it would be that particular state, for example, in California, let's say, there may be some accounting rules and things. Do you find that that's becoming an issue as well, or how do you deal with that?
Yes, you know, I mean, country-specific accounting is always an issue. So by default, you know, we have cash-based accounting, no accounting, or, you know, we have accrual accounting for our loan products and saving products. And there are always going to be a bit of variations, but, you know, the platform itself is very modular. You know, so somebody can take the accrual accounting system we currently have or the cash-based accounting system we currently have and tweak it, you know, with minimal effort to meet their requirements. And, you know, along with that, you know, we have this regular accounting package. So it's easy, and we have a reporting framework of our own, you know, so that they can build the kind of accounting reports which are required, you know, on a country-to-country basis. You know, so that's the approach we've been taking so far.
Yeah, and I think usually the regulatory challenges, they boil down to that reporting side. And so, like Vishwas said, we've integrated with the Pentaho Business Intelligence Framework. So, you know, we look to our partners to try and build out that core set of reports that the central banks require. But regulation, you know, we're seeing is becoming more and more of a challenge as some of our customers begin to grow and become, you know, more formal financial institution. And this varies, you know, country to country, region to region. But having the flexibility that we do now have with the platform is making this, you know, more surmountable task for us.
Hmm. And I would imagine working across so many different regions, you've got, I mean, we all know how laws are different in every country, and no one seems to quite agree on anything. I'd imagine that, especially with financial stuff, that's going to be quite important that you get those reports exactly as they need to be, and everything's ticked and whatever else. I was just curious about, this may be a totally off-the-wall question, I don't know, it may be totally unrelated, but I was just curious if, like, in the last kind of 6 years, a lot of things have changed, obviously, since we last spoke to you. I was wondering if the changes, you know, the development of things like Bitcoin and all these other things that are going on now on the internet have had any effect on your thinking, maybe, or how you do things?
You know, I mean, that's very interesting, you know, Bitcoin. So, you know, currently, you know, it's, but, you know, the technology has not yet, you know, gone down to the, you know, level which our target market is. So our biggest influence over the past few years has been, you know, the spreading of mobile banking. You know, so M-Pesa and other such organizations, you know, who knows, you know, maybe in a couple of years, even Bitcoin. So,
yeah. I mean, I suppose, as I was thinking about it, I was going to say, you can't yet go into, I mean, I can't even do that here, so there's no way I'm going to be able to do it around the world. I can't go into a shop and go, I've got some Bitcoins, give me that thing there. So that hasn't quite reached that level yet. Cool. All right. And so let's talk a little bit about the community side of this, because you've got quite an active community going on there. I mean, how many people are working on this? I mean, you guys work directly on the code and so on, but you've got a lot of contributors as well. So how does the kind of community shape up? You've got an active kind of contributing community there?
Yes, I can give a high-level overview, and then Vishwas can give more of the details of the day-to-day technical work. So we've got you know, three main audiences in our community. So we've got our partners, and so those are the ones implementing the software and developing solutions on top of it. And then we've got our contributors. So those are the ones working on the code, working on documentation, you know, translating the software, working on our testing. And then we have our users. And so we work to get them all connected, both virtually, and then we also host an annual summit each year to bring together everyone in person. And so looking at our contributors, we've got a, you know, really wide range, and they're geographically distributed around the world. So we've got partners like Musoni who are based in Amsterdam. We've got, you know, members of Vishwas's team at Conflux who are based in India. We've got, you know, a number of partners in Latin America and Kenya. And then we've also worked closely with other companies like IBM. This past year, we worked with ThoughtWorks and their humanitarian software program. And so they probably, you know, throughout the year had nearly 24 different people from their team who worked on all aspects of our project. And then we try and also, you know, work with corporations through partners like Social Coding for Good that allow us to bring on volunteers for dedicated periods of time. So we had a usability expert from VMware who worked with our project for 3 months, and she traveled out in the field and met our users and then provided the design for a new user interface. And then, you know, we've also been working closely with Google, so we've participated in their Summer of Code program the past 2 years, and then they also helped to sponsor our summit. So we try and have, you know, a broad mix of these small local technology companies that are becoming partners on our platform, and then corporate and individual volunteers worldwide. So,
Excellent. And Vishwas, you're going to tell us a bit about the technical side of that. So how does it work? I mean, one of the things I noticed when I listened to the old interview, which I keep saying was old, but you were talking a lot about subversion for version control and stuff. I'm imagining you've probably moved on from that now, or have I gone wildly?
Yes, we have. You know, we're in GitHub right, now. Right. So we do what everybody does, you know, so fork and send a pull request. So that's the model we use for, you know, our contributions. And one of the other changes we've made is, you know, we are trying to have more frequent releases. So we have released at least once every couple of weeks. And, you know, GitHub makes, you know, collaboration that much more easier. And, you know, probably, I mean, we get collaboration from many different channels, you know, like what Ed was telling was, you know, we have these partners. So these partners, they respond to the needs of their local communities, you know, so they take out entire modules, you know, like, say, a different system of accounting or, you know, some accounting reports which are required for a particular region, you know, so they take care of, you know, specking out those requirements, getting it developed and then contributing it back. So all we need to do is, you know, just make sure it's in line with our vision and, you know, merge it into our main code base. And, you know, then there are all these the regular volunteers, you know, so, you know, they work on, you know, different bits of the technology. So it can be either on the platform or the user interface. So I guess most of the architectural decisions we have made, you know, is to enable this parallel development, you know. So, for example, the reason why we chose AngularJS for user interface, you know, is because it enables this parallel development, you know, for the user interface, you know. So, you know, somebody can work on the Vue, you know, who doesn't have any idea about JavaScript or AngularJS, you know. So a UI designer can work on your HTML and CSS independent to a JavaScript developer who can build out, you know, the controllers and the models and so on. So, you know, we are trying to keep our technology and, you know, individual components as modular as possible, so different people can, you know, work and collaborate on them, you know, parallelly. So,
That's really interesting. Parallel programming is so important for a software team. I think that's really. I mean, I think it's difficult sometimes for open source projects as they get started to kind of embrace that, right? Because usually it starts with one person, and they know what's going on, and then to be able to open that up, it really is kind of a leap of faith sometimes. So making that transition easy and make it easy for people to work on bits and pieces is really important. It sounds like you've done a good job at that. I wanted to ask a little bit around the implementation side. I usually try to get these questions in for folks that are thinking about setting this up themselves. How hard is it to implement? How do you size an environment for this? You talked about like the person from VMware that was going around, you know, kind of helping people set up. I mean, are there actually services that people can buy? Like, I want to have someone come out on my site. I want to set this up, but I don't know how to size it, how big of a server I need, how much memory. Can you talk about some of the implementation considerations?
Yes, you know, so like some of the services you can buy off the shelf, you know, you have many specialists who offer their own cloud hosting services, you know, so they're based on Amazon, Rackspace, or Windows Azure. And, you know, they start from as low as, say, $100 a month for your entire hosting, you know, including your hardware charges. And Mifos is not very, the platform itself is not very resource hungry. So for a small organization, you know, which has, you know, less than 10 or 20 concurrent users, you know, you can have up to, say, you know, I don't know, 5,000 to 10,000 customers and probably double the amount of loans. But the number of concurrent users, you know, so that is your tellers, and equivalent of your tellers in a bank. So if they're, you know, less than 20, we have seen some organizations, you know, work on a Pentium 2 system. So they have the server on, you know, your a Pentium 2 system. So again, it depends largely on, it's on a case-to-case basis. It depends on the size of your organization, the number of concurrent users you expect. So, I mean, we have quite a bit of, you know, detailed studies on it and use cases where, you know, how an organization with, you know, close to a million customers and the kind of hardware they need. So, you know, so based on looking at those use cases, you know, so somebody could get an idea of the kind of hardware which they would need to run their organization.
Right, right. And I know you talked about multi-tenant earlier, which is running a lot of instances on the same install. But in this regard, what about, I mean, you mentioned starting on cloud services as an example, which I think is, it sounds like a reasonable suggestion here. Start small and then you can grow that as you go. But how do you grow past a single server? Is it always vertical growth within a single box, or can you, is there a grid architecture that someone could employ if they do, you know, outgrow the limits of a single instance?
Right. You know, so, I mean, because our platform is RESTful and, you know, it's stateless, so horizontal scaling is very easy. I mean, you know, vertical scaling is always an option, but at any point of time, if you want to scale out horizontally, it becomes, you know, so much simpler. And the main reason which we went multi-tenant, you know, was to help out these specialists, you know, because if you have a single customer, you know, you have a single bank or a microfinance hosting MeForce, they don't really need multi-tenancy. But, you know, the real problem we came across, you know, there are this large number of small organizations. And, you know, for them, even, you know, say, affording, say, $30 or $40 a month for Amazon hosting becomes expensive. So when you have this, when you have a multi-tenant a multi-tenant product, you know, so you can have, you know, 5 to 6 small organizations, you know, hosted on a single small Amazon instance. So,
yeah, that's cool. And what about, data analysis is becoming, you know, so important now. And I'm thinking about your customers that might try to deploy this as software as a service. I mean, is there any sort of privacy concerns or data collection going on? So someone may be interested in the data collection. Users probably are more interested in making sure their data is kept private. But I'm just kind of curious about what sort of analytics may or may not be involved in MeForce.
You know, I mean, we don't, you know, get any analytics for ourselves. So the core open source, you know, MeForce platform or your app, it doesn't really report back to us. And, you know, we don't get any analytics at all. So, I mean, all the reports which we have in all the data analytics which we do is for that particular customer.
Yeah.
So there is that complete privacy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good. But I can see, so like internally, as if I was a XYZ company and I was using MeForce and I was rolling this out to thousands of little businesses all over the place, it would be really interesting for me to see, for example, hey, I have, I have these installations or these customers and they're spread out all over the place and they're using MeForce, but I seem to be growing really quickly in this one area. Maybe I better, do some ads or something in this particular city or in this particular area because I can see that I'm getting more and more interest from this particular region for whatever reason. Is that type of data analysis possible for the host, someone who would be deploying this as a host?
Yeah, it is possible, you know. So if you have an organization who's hosting it for multiple banks, you know, there's nothing stopping them really, you know, from trying to access the data. So,
yeah. Okay. Cool.
I think to add to that, Aaron, like one of the, you know, really interesting areas that our platform's opening up is, you know, more for the data analysis for the individual customer themselves. So some of our customers, you know, especially the ones who are a bit larger, they're having to compete more and more with their local banks. And for them, their biggest competitive advantage is really that relationship they have with their customer and understanding and knowing, you know, what those savings accounts are, what those loan accounts are that they need to help them and their families grow financially. So we're trying to build in as many of the tools to collect more of this client level data. And we also have, you know, the ability to track some interesting metrics like the progress out of poverty index. So this is a simple, you know, 10 question scorecard that was developed by Grameen Foundation. And by, you know, asking this simple survey on a regular basis, you can actually monitor and track if a client is moving in or out of poverty over time relative to their country's, you know, national poverty line. So it's these types of client metrics that are going to have, you know, really dramatic and transformative power for our customers on the platform in the future. So
yeah, definitely. Who do you guys compete with from, you know, commercial or other open source projects. This seems like it has such a sweet spot for, you know, small implementations that don't want to go buy the big software packages from Oracle and other folks, right? I mean, they want to get off the ground, they want to get started, they know they're going to have, you know, a small number of customers or clients, and they don't necessarily want to buy into that big package right away. I mean, it sounds like there's a sweet spot there, and that's where you guys play very well. But is that true? And what other who are your competitors in this space?
Yeah, well, I'll add, and then I'll let Vishwas fill in anything he wants to. So there definitely is a lot of fragmentation in the market. So there are a lot of, you know, those global core banking solutions like, you know, Temenos and Finacle and Bankers Realm that have a presence, and they, you know, they cater to some of the larger customers. And then for the smaller and mid-sized institutions, usually we're looking at local off-the-shelf software providers, or more often than not, you know, a company might try and build out their own custom solution or just, you know, work on Excel. So it is, you know, really varied from region to region who the competition is and what system they're looking at. But often it's, you know, looking at a local or custom solution. And, you know, with Mifos X, we really think we have a strong value proposition because, you know, we provide that core that has the 80% of the functionality that you need, and then the remaining percentage can be built on, and you don't have to start from scratch.
Right. Cool. So let's kind of transition now to talk about what's coming up. So what are you guys working on? What are the top things that are top of mind for you guys? What can we expect to see, you know, by the time you guys come out again in another 4 to 6 years? Is that for Vishwas?
Do you want to cover the product, and I can talk a little bit about the community and what we're doing there?
Okay. You know, so, I mean, one of the things we're shooting for is more breadth, you know, so we're trying to get in as many different kind of product, you know, support as many different kind of, you know, products as we come across. You know, we're trying to add more flexibility to, you know, our accounting modules. So, you know, the target is that, you know, when a microfinance, you know, grows and it eventually becomes a full-fledged bank, you know, we'd still want MIFOS to be able to support it. So, and along with that, so, you know, some of the work we're doing is, you know, we're building a community app which can, you know, do this store and forward, you know, kind of the mobile app which some of our partners already have. And, you know, honestly, over a long time, you know, we don't really know where we'll be heading, you know, because we've always been very responsive to the needs of our customers. And, you know, as microfinance evolves, you know, we'll be evolving around it. So.
Yeah, and just to add one thread, I think, you know, we think will be pretty common throughout that is mobile. So as we touched on, you know, both mobile as a channel for the customer themselves to be able to, you know, better leverage their data in the field and reach out to their customers, but mobile also as, you know, that platform for actually doing the transactions and having the clients interact with their system. So mobile is going to be a big area for us, and, you know, it won't just be for financial services. There's also a play, you know, with microfinance and clean energy. There's also work with financial inclusion and health, and mobile really is a rails to reach all those different, you know, livelihood mechanisms. And so we're, you know, happy that we've got a platform in place, and we're really looking to our partners in our community to chart the new path forward on what innovations happening there. And then on the community side, our goal really is to move towards, you know, being a vibrant and growing and self-sustaining community. So this year we're launching our local Mifos chapters. So this year we're hoping to get, you know, chapters set up in areas like Nairobi and Bangalore and Lagos and Accra where our users are. But we're also hoping to set up chapters in the Bay Area, Seattle, London, and other places where we can start to evangelize the project. We can, you know, build more demand amongst users, but also give a common place for people to come together and volunteer and hack away at our platform and come up with new innovations. And then we want to continue to make our partners successful. So making sure they've got the business models to take our software further and further out there around the world. And, you know, giving people the tools to connect with our users so they know what innovation to build. And then just making sure that we've got the framework and collaboration infrastructure in place to allow more and more volunteers to contribute to our platform. So we're working to make sure, you know, we as an organization are streamlined to handle this, but we want volunteers helping everywhere on the project, be it, you know, writing out the specs for a new feature, building that feature, testing that feature, documenting that feature, translating that feature, or just simply helping us to grow and expand the community itself. So volunteers are a huge part of our mission and a critical factor to our overall success.
And I wanted to ask a bit about how people get more involved with the project and so on. So I'm going to ask a technical, how do people get technically involved for Vishwas first, and then I'll come back to you, Ed. So for people who want to get involved, people who are thinking, you know, because there is such a social need for this kind of stuff. Can I imagine a lot of people would think, I've got a little bit of free time, I want to do something good with it, and this is a project where they can do good, you know, I would think. And if you are a programmer or you're a developer and stuff, how do people get involved? Is it as simple as just going to GitHub and getting the code and then starting to hack on it, or is there specific things that you would advise people to do from a technical side?
You know, I mean, it could be as simple, you know, as, you know, going to GitHub, getting the source code. We track all our issues on Jira, you know, so if you have a look at, you know, Mifos Jira, so you'd see a lot of issues which are marked as introductory or volunteer, and they're across, you know, different technologies, you know, so there are some Java related issues, there are some MySQL related issues, there are AngularJS related issues, there are pure CSS and UI related issues, there's documentation related issues, there are automated testing related issues, you know. So, I mean, for most skill set, you'll be able to find, you know, some or the other way to contribute. And, you know, you can always introduce yourself on our mailing lists or on our IRC, you know, mm-hmm. if you want any help, or, you know, and we have a lot of developers who are always, you know, happy to help out. So.
Excellent. And I'm going to jump back to Ed, as I said. So you mentioned volunteers a lot. So is there anything specific that you're looking for at the moment that you need a hand with doing or so on? Or is it just the usual, we need as many people as possible?
Yeah, we need as many people as possible. But some of the gaps, you know, we're starting to run into now that we have built out more and more features on the platform and we're interacting with more users, is getting some product managers to help us, you know, write out some of those specifications and requirements. And then we're also mm-hmm. in need for a lot of testing right now. So we are, you know, adding in many more functionalities, and the platform is growing, and we need more of that automated testing coverage in place. So those are, you know, some of the two big areas right now. So.
Hmm. And I have to ask the I was going to say the dirty question. That's not quite right, but the question about how is this all kind of funded? Is it an NGO? Is it, how does that work? You have some kind of charity structure there? It's a non-profit?
Yeah. So last year, you know, with the new project, we finally got our 501c3 status from the IRS, and then primarily, you know, we've been funded by, you know, wealthy individuals right now, but we're looking to bring on more foundational grants and government grants. So to date, you know, Paul Moritz has been the leading funder of our project, and he's actually the chairman of our board now as well. But now that we are a 501c3, we're looking to, you know, build out our fundraising across these foundations and grants, but we're also always looking for, you know, individuals to make any small contribution that they can make as well. And then as the core organization, you know, we want most of the value to be driven and created by our partners, but we do intend over time to, you know, capture some revenues through training for these partners or certification of these partners, and then, you know, hosting some of these events and getting sponsorships from corporate partners. But for the majority of, you know, the actual support and promotion of the software to the customers, we see that value being in the partner network and allowing them, you know, to work with the customer and build out the solutions that they need locally. So.
Excellent. And I noticed from the information that you sent us that this isn't the only community management that you're doing at the moment. And apparently you're managing a lot of various animals in a small holding that you've got there. How's that working out?
Yeah, it's working pretty good, and I've got to go out after this and, you know, let the goats out and let the chickens out and feed the rabbits too. But yeah, like okay. That keeps me busy in my spare time. So
yeah, and so it gives you going to say, it gives you regular screen breaks then. You've got kind of built in, I need to go out and get away from this screen now and go and sort the goats or something. Unless you've got another screen in there that you also...
not quite yet, but I'd like to do that. Yeah, no, I get some fresh air and then I get the aroma of the animals. Uh-huh. And then, yeah, with Vishwas, you know, you thought he was still in India, but he actually just moved to Seattle, like only, you know, in the past couple months. So this is a brand new experience for him being here in the States. So,
yeah, I was going to ask actually, Vishwas, how is it moving over? Is it obviously cultural differences, I'm sure, but is it giving you a different kind of perspective on working in the company, being in the States or so on?
Yeah, you know, it is. You know, it's fun here. And, you know, I live in the university district, you know, so there are a lot of students around. And you know, I'm trying to get into the hippie culture. You know, I've turned vegan for the past 15, 20 days. You know, so it's fun. It's different.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, then. I think Aaron's got some questions, some more questions about platform, language and so on.
Well, yeah, of course, you know, in Randall's absence, we have to ask the obligatory
end of the
show questions. But before I do, is there anything that we haven't covered that you guys are just burning to tell people about? Because now's your chance. Is there anything that we've missed or we've forgotten to ask or you really have on your mind that you want to tell people about?
Yeah, I think just to note, you know, we're looking for as many volunteers as we can get. And then our current mifos.org website, you know, has all the links to the volunteer opportunities. But we're also going to be launching a new website soon, which will, you know, make it easier to navigate our current software and how to get involved. But you should be able to find what you need there. But just definitely go on GitHub and fork the repository or, you know, contact us on mailing lists or IRC because those are the best ways to get in touch with us. So.
Great, great. Anything else from you, Vishwas? Anything?
No, nothing from my side.
Okay, we've covered
pretty much everything.
Oh, excellent. We've done our job. Another successful show. No, that's great. So here's the two questions that we always have to ask, and you guys take turns responding to these. I don't know, maybe Ed, you can go first. But the first question we always ask is, you know, what's your favorite scripting language, or do you have a favorite?
Yeah, well, I'm not too technical myself, so I'll have to defer on that. I mean, I was going to say that, yeah, when you asked the question around open source projects, you know, I guess I'm a big fan of Android, and it's more because, yeah, I enjoy the openness of it, but I'm also not the biggest fan of iOS and Apple products, so I'm kind of a anti-Apple zealot.
Right. Well, you're in good company here, so that's for sure. How about you, Vishwas? Do you have a favorite scripting language that you like to use?
No, probably Perl.
Oh, excellent. Randall would be glad to hear that. So
Randall would be pleased.
Yeah. He always loves when people say Perl. It seems like it's happening. Well, I won't say it's happening less and less. Perl's going to come down. Perl's coming down strong, baby. I use Perl all the time, so I can understand that. Now, how about your favorite editor? I don't know, Ed, if you're, like you said, you're not as technical, so maybe we'll just defer to Vishwas on that. Do you have a favorite editor, VI, Emacs? What do you like to use?
Yeah, I use Sublime Text. So,
wow!
It has this multiple cursors functionality. You know, it makes things really easier.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out. I've never used it. I've used lots of other things, but Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, for the rare times I have to, you know, edit some text files, I think I use Notepad++. I think is what it's called. So
sure.
Yeah,
it's an easy one to use. A lot of people use that. So. Cool. Well, great. Well, guys, it's been really, really interesting having you guys on. I know our audience is going to love this topic of conversation. It just seems to really be something that has a lot of appeal in the general community, but as well, it seems like there's a real need for this type of software. And it's great that you're leveraging open source to make this all happen. So thanks for coming on, guys. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure being on, and it's been a lot of fun, so thanks for having us.
All right, take care.
Take care, guys.
So that is Mifos and the new platform, Mifos X. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I mean, there seems to be such a need for this software as well, and I don't want to get overly emotional blackmail, I suppose, on the listeners, but, you know, if you are a developer or even just somebody who can help in some way, in volunteering, then this seems like a really good cause for that, because there's such a need for this kind of stuff going on. And it seems that, like, there's so many challenges across different regions. We talked about the legal stuff and accounting and tax and all that. We've also got languages and cultural stuff. So I think it's really great that they're doing this. And I mean, let's hope it's not 6 years until we get to hear back from them about what's going on next time.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it seems like the development is really taking off now, especially with the things they mentioned, like multi-tenant. That's really cool. And it really enables, it seems like an enabling feature, right? It seems like they've got a lot of these features that enable people to roll out things like software as a service for their local country, where local regulations and reporting is important. And I think that's really cool, besides all the other cool mobile development, mobile apps development and things like that, and API development that they talked about. So it's always good to have a project that's open source and has, you know, kind of a social benefit as well. It's a real double whammy. So it's really, really great to hear. speaking of things that are really great to hear, I'm sure all our listeners will love to hear about what's coming up on Floss Weekly in the future. So let's talk about that for a little bit. Of course, Randall is away. We didn't really mention that at the top of the show, but it's pretty obvious that he's not here. Hello. If you haven't figured that out by now, you better wake up and get some more coffee. McDonald's makes a good brew, actually. Here you go. This is turned around the other way, not on purpose, but it's facing me. Anyway, so Randall's away. He's on a cruise. He typically goes on these cruises, and I don't know if he's just in Turkey, but he was in Turkey the last time I talked to him over email. So having a wonderful time, getting some good recommendations from him if I ever plan to go over there, because I think it would be a lot of fun. So he's the lucky one, and we get to sit here and talk about – no, we're the lucky ones. We get to talk about open source projects here on the show. So he's traveling. But coming up soon, we're going to be talking about C-File. That's going to be, I believe, the next show. And C-File is a next-generation open source cloud storage platform. It offers advanced features like file syncing, privacy protection, teamwork or team sharing abilities. So that sounds really cool. That's C-File. After that, we've got Connections, spelled with an X, which is kind of, I guess it's kind of like a MOOC. I don't know much about Connections, but they advertise as being able to view and share educational materials in small modules that can be organized as courses, books, reports, and other academic assignments. So that's a MOOC, right? I would call that a MOOC. Mm-hmm. And then after that is OSCON. We're going to have a show dedicated to the OSCON conference. So if you're going to be at OSCON or you don't know about OSCON or what it is, that would be a great show to watch to talk about that open source conference. And following that is Jitsi. Jitsi used to be SIP Communicator, and they renamed it as Jitsi. And they've got some really cool upcoming products and platforms that they want to talk about. So if you don't know about Jitsi, it's audio and video chat communication that supports the protocol SIP, which is the main protocol, which allows you to link up with other people, kind of like a virtual phone service, if you will, going over the internet. So I'm sure a lot of our audience has used SIP in the past, so they'll be interested in hearing about Jitsi. They've got a couple of new products or advanced products, the JIT Meet and Jitsi Video Bridge, that they want to talk about. So that'll be coming up May 7th, I believe, at least that's the way it's scheduled right now. So stay tuned for that. You can always find all the shows we're working on online. We've got a spreadsheet. Just go to the Twit site for Floss. You'll be able to link to the spreadsheet, see what we're working on, suggest upcoming shows. If you do have a suggestion, make sure you get in contact with the project leader or someone involved in the project, and then have them contact Randall directly. That's the easiest way for us to get these shows on, instead of going back and forth between third parties and fourth parties and whatever. So have that project leader contact Randall if you'd like to see somebody on the show. And I think I will turn it back over to you, Dan, and see if you have anything you want to plug.
Come and have a listen to Linux Outlaws, which is a weekly show that I co-host. You can find it at sixgun.org, as in, six gun. It's, there's a lot of Western metaphors going on. I'm not sure what's going on there. there's a lot of that going on. I think my co-host's a big John Wayne fan or something. You can find us at sixgun.org, or just search in your favorite search engine for Linux Outlaws. We're back to weekly rotation now, so we're back on schedule. We like to talk about all kind of open source news, not just Linux, things that are going on with Android and other stuff as well, anything open source and gaming even, all kinds of stuff. So come and check us out. And other than that, you can always find me at danlynch.org, where I'm blogging kind of sporadically about all kinds of things. So there you go. How could you resist that?
Right. Awesome. Great. And as far as I'm concerned, you can follow me at Google Plus. I am Plus Aaron Newcomb on Google Plus, and that's where I hang out most of the time. It's been great to get in touch with people, listeners of the show, and just other people in various communities. It's a great way for me to actually interact, as opposed to Facebook, where you're just kind of reading the timeline thing and liking things, whatever. On Google Plus, it's actually, for me anyway, it's a lot easier to reach out and say, oh, that's a great idea. Where did you find out about that? And go back and forth and everything. So follow me on Google Plus. I started my website back up again, sort of. I've just got like a welcome message on there right now and a couple links to some shows. But I'm planning on using that to talk more about, in depth, about projects I'm working on and things. Because a lot of people seem to be really interested about some of the projects and maker stuff that I'm involved in. So I'm going to try to use the website for that. That's thesourceshow.org. And of course, here on the Twit Network, you can follow me on the various shows that I'm doing. If you're watching live, be sure to tune back into This Week in Google. I'll be on This Week in Google. Or if you're watching later, be sure, you know, go back and download This Week in Google, too, to see more of me. No, it's because it's a great show. So, yeah, be sure to check out all the other shows here on the Twit Network that I'm involved in. As far as this show, you can follow us. We're at Floss Weekly on Twitter, plus Floss Weekly on Google+. Randall's pretty good about using Google+ to announce the shows, and when he books shows in advance, he always puts that on there. So it's a great way to follow what's going on in Floss Weekly. You can join the chat live if you want to, irc.twit.tv, or watch live at live.twit.tv. But you know all that already because you're such a good audience and you tune in every week and ask great questions. Thanks again to the chat room for tuning in. For Floss Weekly, I'm Aaron Newcomb. Thanks for watching and tune in again next time.